Thursday, January the 4th, began after midnight from the governor's mansion in Austin with John and Nellie. They'd been to see Hello Dolly and came afterwards to their family quarters on the second floor. Extremely modest for a governor's family, I thought. Young Johnny came in with his date, and Sharon, very cute and feminine. Lucy and Patrick talked to them in the kitchen, and Lyndon and John and Nellie and I settled down in the living room to talk about families, painting, and farming. The colonists would have been dumbfounded. The politics obtruded hardly at all into our conversation. We left after 12:30 and drove through the pea soup fog to the ranch. The next morning, I awoke again to find the world still shrouded in a gray cloak. Weather fit only to sit around the fire and tell tales, as Daddy would have said. The plane was coming down from Washington, bringing Sarge Shriver, Charlie Schultz, and Mr. Zwick, Joe Califano. Couldn't land at the ranch. We decided, rather late in the morning, to drive into Austin and meet them at the Federal Building and have lunch there instead. So I was quickly on the phone to reach Gertrude in Austin, get her to the grocery store, and up to that lovely suite to prepare lunch for somewhere between 6 and 10. It's really quite marvelous how people move with agility and good humor and very considerable efficiency, I think. James and Mary and Gertrude, I arranged to send her one steward in, check that off, and turned to Linda and Chuck. Linda has been really sick since Tuesday when she got back from skiing at Red River, New Mexico. Two infected ears, congestion in the chest, a dreadful cold, and fever. But Chuck must return, and she is determined to. I lost the bout early this morning when I went in to try to persuade her once more not to go back, only to find the doctor there telling her that, yes, he thought, if she went right back to bed, got a lot of rest and her medicine, it would probably be all right. So the three of us drove in through the gray and dreary countryside. Such a few days of golden sun we've had, and this will be our longest stay in Texas for a whole year. I kissed them goodbye at Bergstrom at 12:30 and went on in to the Federal Building to find a real humming organization. Mary Rather at the reception desk, Marie in close to Lyndon, he in conference with Sarge Shriver, and Charlie Schultz and Mr. Zwick in the outer office. I'm going to miss Charlie Schultz. He has that wonderful leaven of humor. With all the heavy, tough business of the budget, he inspires confidence in me, and at the same time, he amuses. I had sent in the pickup a group of pictures in to hang, so I got the carpenter and busied myself in all the rooms where it wouldn't interfere with Lyndon. The beautiful medieval religious painting that the Pope had given Lyndon is very handsome on the paneled wall of the living room. And the framed Chinese scroll that I love so much at the Elms looks elegant in the reception corridor. I hung the inaugural invitations of 61 and 65 in Marie's office, and a Bart portrait of Lyndon, and a new landscape, a gift from the John Conleys. Okay. Praises be, we found here a pen and ink drawing by Madame Chiang Kai-shek that I hadn't been able to locate for ages. We hung it in the dining room, not as perfect a place as it deserved. And a portrait of me in Government House, a gift of the Australian government, and Lyndon's small private sitting room. All in all, I was very pleased with my work, and we had a delicious luncheon. At Lyndon's suggestion, I called Jesse and Pat, so there were 11 of us at the table. I think it had been a tense and touchous morning, probably, for Sarge Shriver. He is a great advocate for all the programs of poverty, but Lyndon, at last, has the hard job of finding where the money is going to come from and evaluating between that one and everything else. This season of the year is especially tough. Every department is topped by a man who naturally is advocate for its work, its programs, and every department must be slashed. And saying no is an exhausting, draining, unhappy job. So much of this job is unhappy. After lunch, he had sessions with the others. Zwick apparently is going to be the new director of the budget. A little after 4, we said goodbye to them all and drove out by Brackenridge Hospital to go in for a brief visit with Mrs. Ostrowitzky and her daughter. They're the family of the Hearst newspaper man. The whole family was in a car wreck. I believe it was New Year's Day. They were seriously injured and looked quite bad. And in a way, I felt embarrassed to intrude upon them. But there was no doubt in their faces that they appreciated it. We started driving home. John and Nellie were coming out to see us. We met at Oak Hill, and they got in with us in the big, long black limousine. and we drove back out through the pea soup fog, very slowly, taking nearly 2 hours to get to the ranch. It's one nice thing about the weather, it makes it so much more cheerful inside by a big fire. And this day, which had begun after 12 o'clock in the mansion, ended after 12 o'clock here at the ranch house. Most of the time was spent talking with John and Nellie on what we should do, and if we are not going to run, how and when do we say so. We took time out for dinner, Lucy and Pat, and played with Patrick Linden, and Marie and Jim, and Mary Rather, happy reminder of so many years past. So easy and comfortable to have her here, just as though she'd never been away. And then, about 9:30, we went back to Linden's bedroom, the four of us, and talked without interruption for nearly 3 hours. John said, "You ought to run only if you really look forward to being president again, only if you want to do it." I think he meant if there was an element of joy in the work. You ought not to if the frustrations, the pain, the back-breaking work make you dread it. You also ought not to run just to keep somebody else from being president. Some of the most lucid and interesting words were spoken by Nellie. She said, "You'll probably find after you've made the decision, if you decide not to run, there's a sort of a funereal period where you feel like everything is stopped. You're sad. You almost feel like you're dead. And then when that is passed, there's a great wave of relief." In looking at John, I myself see no hint, no likelihood that he will reconsider and run, as some of the columnists in Texas are saying. Linden spoke of the simple fact that he feels older and tireder than he did 10 years ago, 5 years ago. And what of the next 5 years? Suppose he runs and wins. Would he be able to carry the load in a way that he would be proud of and that the country deserves for all of those years? Most of all, always in the background, is that lowering shadow of nuclear power. And sometime, somewhere, would he have to make a decision on using that? And yet, if he chooses to get out, what will history say of him? What will his friends and those close to him and believing in him say of him? What will the soldiers in Vietnam say of him? He spoke of the possibility of making the decision, probably at the end of the State of the Union message. But that, of course, would negate the whole message. John made one statement that went something like this: "The only way to answer all those arguments is to die in office." And so we went round and round, and I got some insight into how it felt to a very strong and good couple who had just made their decision, and theirs was to get out. And I, as a citizen, cannot help but feel sad, regretful about what they did. And yet, for them, there is certainly a measure of happiness in it. Who knows, who knows? And so we went round and round on the same hot griddle, finding no cool oasis, no acceptable exit. John was going to take Nellie down to the ranch and to leave her to clean it up and drive back to Austin that night. It was after 12:30 when they left. The companionship is always good, even if the product is not conclusive.